Blog Talk Radio.
Guard is a reserve component of the United States Air Force and serves alongside active duty Air Force members in times of a national crisis. In addition, the Air Guard serves the state and local community in a wide range of capacities. The reason people join the Air Guard is as diverse as our members and includes such reasons as a deep desire to serve their country, money for college, travel, new job skills, and the pride that goes along with belonging to the greatest military organization in the world. I joined because I felt a calling to serve my country, but I didn't want to be far away from my family, so the Indiana Air National Guard was a perfect fit for me. With over 95 different career opportunities to choose from and 100% paid college tuition to any state-funded college, why not give us a call? Call 1-800-841-3103 or visit online at goang.com to find out more. Again, that's 1-800-841-3103. The Air National Guard, guarding America, defending freedom.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your move.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar.
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I've seen on the board, do you guys have Black Rifle coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so I don't, you know.
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Le Croix Pique, which, of course, in the Indonesian, like, oh, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes. But it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wanting.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just going to order it. They make it freshly roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
Alrighty, and welcome back to the Balance. My name is Tom Mark with El Presidente. I think we were having some mic issues at the opening, so you may have missed my opening dialogue. I won't bore you with it again, but we've got racing and we've got basketball. And Adam Jividen, super duper Buckeyes fan, Browns fan, Guardians fan, and Cavs fan, super duper fan, and our official Swiss Army Knife is here to help us break down some NBA as we're leading into the last part of the NBA season. We're going to looking forward to the playoffs soon. Adam, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Tom. How are you, man?
Fantastic. Can you hear me okay? That's the most important thing.
Yep, I got you.
I don't know what's going on. I may have to go and get new equipment, man. I'll tell you what. It's always something around here, just like it is always something in the NBA. Your Cavs got a good win. Thoughts on that game? In overtime.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they picked up the win last night against the Timberwolves. I think the more surprising win was the down 21 in the fourth quarter win against the Celtics the other night. That was the one that was the surprise. You know, it was a really, really close game, and then the Celtics went on a run, and I think every Cavs fan was just like, all right, well, it is what it is. You know, we were without our three-point gunner, Max Strus. Evan Mobley got hurt in that game. He's been dealing with injuries kind of all season. So for them to come back, win on a putback dunk and then subsequent stop on the defensive end, Dean Wade got the stop. It was a really great win on a night that they announced a partnership with Jason and Travis Kelce, who, for those of you that don't know, are natives of Cleveland, Ohio. They attended Cleveland Heights High School, which is not it's not one of those rich, really well-off high schools in the suburbs. It is a working man's high school, and the Kelce announced a partnership with the Cavaliers, which was really cool to have them courtside on that night for the Celtics game.
Taylor, was it there?
No, she was not.
Well, you know, another reason why I led with that game is really something more importantly stupid to talk about, but because that's what we do. Rudy Gobert cost the Timberwolves a win Friday night in Cleveland, even though he admits that he's at fault for the poorly timed criticism on the court. He's not shying away from his belief that NBA officials may be influenced by sports betting. What happened with 27.8 seconds to play? Joe Hart was whistled for his sixth foul and then a technical foul for gesturing money signs at the refs. Darius Garland used the tech to make a free throw that tied the game 97-94. So overtime, of course, we know what happened from there. The Cavs won 113-104. We have had this issue before in the NBA, in the refs' world. How far off is he, or is he just giving me something to talk about on my podcast on Saturday morning?
You know, we did have the allegations from Tim Donaghy, former basketball, disgraced basketball NBA referee, that it was a lot more prevalent than anybody realized. And then the NBA really tried to ratchet down on anything related to the idea of tampering. I mean, you have to. Otherwise, the integrity of the league is continually in question. Rudy Gobert is one of those guys that I don't think uses his brain and is always very, very highly critical of the officials. You know, I feel like when it comes to a scenario like that, like let's just say that that's going to happen. Right now, the Cavs are second in the East. The Timberwolves are second in the West. I feel like if the refs are going to really care about, quote-unquote, rigging a game, it is not going to be against the Cavaliers in early March. You could see something like that. I feel like you could have whispers about something like that. If it was against, say, the Lakers or the Celtics or one of the big, what you would consider big time, like the long-standing NBA legacy franchises, it ain't happening in March, Rudy. You screwed up. You got a foul. You are one of the most egregious foul offenders in the league since you've come in. Just take that freaking foul and get over it.
Right, yeah. No, I couldn't agree with you more. But, you know, the thing about it is it has become prevalent in sporting across the landscape, if you will. NFL has dealt with their own betting issues. But we have, in recent years, dealt with a ref that was very much involved we'll just call it what it is, getting payoffs and betting against games and that sort of stuff. And, you know, he's no longer in the league, thank God.
He's in jail. So, I mean, he's not just not in the league.
Well,
he's not in society.
Well, I knew he went in jail. I just didn't know how long he went. So I had to cover my bases. And thank you, Adam.
He is still there.
Still there. Well, maybe he's roughing the yard games, I guess.
The yard games? Yeah. Are we going to have, a sequel to The Longest Yard starring Tim Donaghy, like The Strongest Foul?
That was literally the movie that was just popping in my head. You know, we should do that. So, fun fact, since we're talking about things to be critical about, 28 years ago today, Michael Jordan had 53 points, 21, 28, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, and 2 3-point versus the Pistons. He was 23 years old and at that time. Now, fast forward to March 8th or whatever it is, 2024. LeBron James claims Michael Jordan wouldn't average 50 in today's NBA. So it brings us back to the age-old cycle that everybody's been talking about for as many years as I can remember since LeBron got in the league. Who's the better player, Michael Jordan or LeBron James? They're both great players and great impact players to the game. But LeBron James can't help himself. He's got to keep that argument saga going up. So I ask you, a student of LeBron James and King James guy, who also went to high school there in Cleveland, never went to college, is he right? Could Michael Jordan average 50 points in today's NBA? I agree with it because
LeBron said Jordan could average 50 or could not?
Could not.
Okay.
Average 50 in today's NBA. You look at the overall. I think Michael Jordan is just as much of a star off the court as he ever was on the court. Look at how deep he runs in the business world and the sporting world. He's in NASCAR for God's sake. I mean, he owns Bubba Wallace's team, and he co-owns it with Denny Hamilton. He is a entrepreneur beyond belief. Can LeBron James say, once I stop playing basketball, of course his brand, his name, he's got a brand, he's got a name. I'll let you chime in here, but at this point, I'm going to let the history tell its thing. But LeBron James had to make sure that on the anniversary of him scoring 50 points, averaging 50 points, he makes a bold claim about Michael Jordan's scoring ability. What are your thoughts?
Okay. I don't feel like that's a bold claim, Tom. 50 points a game. Average 50 points a game. Look, Michael Jordan was not as good a 3-point three-point shooter in his career as LeBron is. And LeBron's not come anywhere close to averaging 50 a game. That means you can have a great night and score 38 and you're 12 points off. I think it's more about idiot reporters that are suggesting that Michael Jordan could average 50 points a game than LeBron saying, no, no, he can't. Like, this is what's absolutely insane. It's like we forget who Michael Jordan actually was, and he's become like this Greek god of status since he's retired and since all of these old crony reporters want to live in the glory years of the 90s basketball, forgetting that the several of the most iconic shots that Jordan hit in his career are against dudes that if they played in the NBA today, A, wouldn't even be in the league, or B, would not get off the bench. They had zero athleticism. They could shoot a little bit. They couldn't run a 40-yard dash. Jeff Hornacek for the Utah Jazz would not play in the NBA today. So no, Jordan wouldn't average 50. Anybody with half a brain cell would go, Jordan's not going to average 50. Steph Curry's the greatest three-point shooter of all time. Even if he's raining shots, you hit a 50-burger in a game, that's a huge game. Why would anybody think that Jordan could score average 50 for a season?
You know, and I agree. That's where I'm at. You know, a lot of people say, you know, would average 50 in a game is disrespectful. LeBron sure, certainly and most definitely is a student of the game. He knows his history and the players and who played the way to the modern era of basketball, that he plays in modern era of basketball. So when he says that it's disrespectful to assume Jordan would average 50 points, people should take note, I guess, of what they're saying. So really, but at the end of the day, Adam, with the advancements in training, nutrition, technology, today's players are bigger, faster, stronger. Tomorrow's players are going to be bigger, faster, stronger. The game's pace has also increased significantly. Again, that trend's going to intend. So while Jordan was undoubtedly one of the greatest scorers in NBA history, assuming that he could do more than he did in his era, might be unfair to the players currently dominating the game.
I don't even want to say it's unfair. It's just stupid. Like, if there's somebody that's suggesting that he would, like, get a clue, man. Like that's the thing. Is it disrespectful? Yes. But like, we seem to forget that, like, I think Jordan's high watermark for a career is 32. And, yes, was more defense played at that point? Defense was played harder, stronger, especially than it was this year. They changed the rules a little bit, and they've already talked about tightening it up because they went too far. But to say that a guy could average 50, that'd be like suggesting that somebody's going to throw 70 touchdown passes. Like, what's hilarious is even in this era where there's less defense played, man, Peyton Manning's 48 touchdowns, Tom Brady's 49 or whatever he hit. Nobody's touching those still. Like,
right.
You know, so great seasons are allowed to stand up on their own. A lot of sports writers right now are in a place where the only way to prop up the current the bygone generation is to try to tear down the one that you're in now. And that's, I think, the thing that's the most sad, is that it feels like nobody and don't get me wrong, last time we were on the show, I was critical of how far the NBA has gone towards changing the rules to make it more offensive-centric. Like, there's too many points scored today. Like, it just is. But to say that a player from a previous era could or couldn't average, I mean, you're talking 14 to 18 points a game more than the best player in the league right now? Like, stop it. Just stop it.
Well, you know, Father Time catches up with everyone, and LeBron James is no exception to that rule. He's had his time. He's had his domination. His domination is on the backside of the mountain at the moment. 1 month after being the subject of trade rumors, D'Angelo Russell has emerged as arguably one of the most important players to the L.A. Lakers and their quest for the playoffs. Russell went off 44 points, 17 out of 25 shooting, 9 of 12 from three-point range, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, and the Lakers 123-122 victory over the Milwaukee Bucks Friday night without playing LeBron James, who nurses an ankle injury now. The Lakers are now 5-4 this season. When he doesn't play, Russell's heroics overshadowed the guy with the giant A name, Antonio Kabontikapos, triple with 34 points and 14 rebounds. D'Angelo Russell is the new face of the Lakers, people. LeBron James' days are in the rearview mirror.
No, I mean, the new face of the L.A. Lakers would be Anthony Davis, not D'Angelo Russell. Like, don't get me wrong, I like D'Lo a lot. I mean, D'Lo went to Ohio State, but the face of the Lakers is Anthony Davis. Let's be real.
All right, well, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about our Pacers, or my Pacers, or somebody's Pacers here. Located here in Indianapolis, where we're located high atop the Mellon Studios on the west suburbs of Indianapolis. We've got the Magic tomorrow and the Oklahoma Thunder on Tuesday. What are your thoughts about the Pacers? I mean, we've got a lot to be liking about the Pacers right now. They are doing a lot of good things, but they're still in mid-pack. They're going to get to the playoffs, but that seems to be where the Pacers stall out at every year, if they even get to the playoffs. So what's your overall look into the horizon look of the Indiana Pacers?
You know, I look at the Pacers, and the thing that's tough about the Pacers is, like, yes, they very well could and will be a playoff team. They should be a playoff team. The Pacers, I worry about roster construction. And they definitely don't really play any defense, like, at all. So, I mean, that is going to ultimately be a hindrance come playoff time. But where I see the players, and I mentioned kind of the roster construction, I feel like the trade for Pascal Siakam was a good trade, but I don't know how well he fits with, say, Miles Turner next to him. Or, you know, it's sometimes where he's just kind of wandering around the court. I had the opportunity to watch the Celtics play the Pacers in Boston. And honestly, like, Siakam, like, you forgot he was in the game because he was just, like, adrift through. And then in the fourth quarter, he made some plays. But, like, he's still, in a lot of ways, trying to figure out his place on this team, which, you know, when you're talking playoffs, and there's still, I mean, goodness gracious, almost a month and a half of a regular season, he can get there. But the thing that the Pacers have to do is they have to figure out as a roster how to get a stop when you need a stop. In the playoffs, you can't just play offense alone and then be like, well, we're just going to outscore everybody, because you're not going to. Like, this is the thing that's interesting about what's happening with the current standings. I was looking at it this morning. You've got the Cavs. Like, the East is pretty – it's teams that have been there before – familiarity, right? You've got Celtics, Cavs, Bucks, Knicks, Magic. Magic are the upstart team there. You can expect one upstart team every year. Heat is the top six. Then the Sixers have been in a free fall since Joel Embiid got hurt. The Pacers are a half game behind, followed by the Bulls, who Bulls have not been to the playoffs in a while. The Hawks are the last team in the play-in. So right now, the Pacers are in the play-in game, and they would be playing against the Bulls. And I would say the Pacers against the Bulls would be a pretty – I would take the Pacers in that matchup. But if you look out west, you've got the Thunder on top, followed by the Timberwolves. The reigning NBA champion Nuggets are third. The Clippers, who finally have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard somewhat healthy at the same time. The Pelicans, who made the playoffs last year, but no one decides that Zion likes cheeseburgers more than basketball. The Suns are sitting at six. And then you go more established team. Kings finished second in the conference last year. Mavericks led by Luka and Kyrie. The Lakers and the Warriors. If you told me, let's just say the Lakers win their play-in game, and they're playing the Timberwolves, who are the number two team in the conference, I don't know that I am taking the Lakers, or I don't know that I'm taking the Timberwolves over the Lakers, even though the seeding would vastly indicate otherwise, because so many of the teams in the Western Conference especially just do not have playoff experience, and the Pacers would fall into that bucket. I don't know if they know what it means. We saw this with the Cavs last year, Tom. I don't know if you remember. The Cavs finished fourth in the conference after being the second team in the conference for a while. They had injuries at the tail end of the season, got everybody back for the playoffs, and then just got smoked in the first round by the Knicks, who were a team that was led by guys that had playoff experience, Jalen Brunson, Julius Randle. And Tom Thibodeau just coached circles around J.B. Bickerstaff, who in his own right as a head coach had never coached in the playoffs. NBA playoff basketball and NBA regular season basketball is a totally different beast. And I don't know that the Pacers aren't going to go into the playoffs and do what the Cavs did last year, depending on what that matchup is.
Talking with Adam Jividen, super Cavs fan, super duper Buckeye fan, super duper Guardians fan, super duper dad, our Swiss Army knife, and really a partner of crime with us here on the show, talking a little bit of NBA. How long can you stay around with us, Adam?
I got just a couple more minutes.
All right, well, I want to get into some college basketball as we're getting ready to take a glimpse at the March Madness. We know that Purdue picked up the Big Ten championship. Let's real quickly kind of jump through some of our, if you will, our bracketology as we get ready for March Madness coming up in a very short time. What are your thoughts, sir, on this week's, this year's outlook as the bracket are going to be made soon?
I feel like as an Indiana, I've lived in Indiana for long enough, I have picked almost every year for the last several years Purdue to make a deep run into the Final Four, and god dang it, Matt Painter, would you freaking figure out how to coach in the NCAA tournament? I feel like every Purdue fan feels exactly the same way. I think that the big news coming out of our territory was both IU and that team up north announcing that Mike Woodson and Juwan Howard were coming back to their respective schools. I feel like it's been a little bit of an up-and-down ride for Mike Woodson, which if you remember when he got hired a couple of years ago, Tom, I was like, man, I don't freaking know about this one. And you were very like, oh, I think he could be really good. And I was like, I don't think so.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, the thing that's tough about that is you have a very good coach in Dusty May. That coach, he's at FAU right now. And he has been on the record saying IU is his dream school. And y'all may lose him, just like y'all lost Thad Mata to my boys in Columbus, Ohio. And LeBron is on the record saying that if Dusty May goes, he's not on the record, he said it through back channel, sorry. Dusty May goes to Columbus, his youngest son, Bryce, who is now bigger and better than Bronny, will likely be playing his college ball at Ohio State, which is pretty cool. There's always been a partner, like there has been a love and association that LeBron has with Ohio State, as most people from the state of Ohio do. So it's really cool. But Dusty May is a superstar in the making, young head coach, and IU is – I feel like any time they have a chance to bring in a coach that could really elevate the program, they just fumble the bag and just – they hold on to guys too long or don't look at guys the right time. They just never seem to get it right.
Well, that's why they call it never seem to get it right. You know, we're fresh off the combine. Real quickly, I'm here for Let's Go. We're fresh off the combine. I wanted to get your thoughts on your man, Marvin Harrison Jr. Where do you think he's going to land? Of course, there was a lot of speculations that I still don't think he'll be the number one overall pick. He might be. He certainly will be in the top three. But where do you think he'll land at? And do you think – I don't think the Colts need to even worry about it. I think they just need to not worry about him. They signed Michael Pittman Jr. to the franchise tag. So there were some rumblings, okay, the Colts just need to make a deal and make it happen and get Marvin Harrison Jr., whatever that deal might be, get it done. I think that's a waste of resources to do that. I don't think that the Colts need to waste their time trying to get Marvin Harrison Jr., but who do you think will? The Bears?
If I don't waste their time to get the best generational wide receiver prospect we've had since Randy Moss, yeah, definitely don't do that, Chris Ballard. Your team has a great job throwing the ball into the end zone. No.
So you're in the camp that Chris Ballard should give away the farm and the goats and the chickens in the backyard to get Marvin Harrison Jr.
Michael Pittman Jr. is not a franchise receiver, yes or no?
No, he's not. No. But he's the best that we got at the moment. And I think it's just I go back to the same thing with Anthony Richardson. We were like, oh, we've got to have a quarterback. He's the best quarterback ever. We've got to have him in there. Let's get him in there. Let's throw him in there. That's what happens when you throw a rookie, no matter how good he was in college. I'm not denying that he has some superhero abilities. I'm not saying that he wouldn't be good with the Colts, but he's
a wide receiver to a rookie quarterback who, Tom, Anthony Richardson was a very raw rookie quarterback coming in. Like, Marvin Harrison is not only a generational talent from a talent perspective, but there are some big-time scouts that are saying if Marvin Harrison enters the league today, which he'll enter the league in a few months, is on the top 10 list of not only wide receivers, but of route runners, hands, body. Marvin Harrison, I mean, Joel Klatt has said on the record, and he said this in multiple games, the minute Marvin Harrison enters the league, he is one of the five best receivers in the league. And a big-time receiver can dramatically shift what your quarterback is able to do. If I look at this draft, the Colts have not had they haven't had a great receiver since Reggie Wayne. T.Y. Hilton, I would say, is a very good receiver. I wouldn't call T.Y. Hilton great. T.Y. Hilton did not have the ability to just take over a game like Marvin Harrison does. Did you have the game plan for T.Y. Hilton? Sure, a little bit, but not as a smaller receiver. T.Y. struggled making contested catches. Not a problem with Marvin Harrison. I think Marvin Harrison is going to be probably fourth to the Arizona Cardinals. Do I think the Colts should try? Yes. Do I think the Cardinals will listen? No. I think Marvin is going to be playing most likely for the Arizona Cardinals, with Kyler Murray as his quarterback at least for a year. And then and then we'll see and go from there. But I expect him to go four, not because he's the fourth best prospect in this draft, but because quarterbacks are going to get overdrafted again and go one, two, three with some combination of Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May. Now, to I think the Bears and the Commanders are going to sit tight. Patriots will probably sit tight, but I think you're going to have teams that are going to try to come up. And there could be, no matter how stupid it is, could be teams that are trying to move up to four to select J.J. McCarthy, number four, even though almost 70% of his touchdown throws the last 2 years came against their worst six opponents. But NFL teams make dumb decisions all the time.
Well, we'll see what happens. Adam Jividen, I would appreciate you joining us as always. You got big plans for the weekend?
I'm just hanging out, working, and I got to go run some errands before the banks and everything closes at noon. So just a normal Saturday.
Are you still a person that actually walks into the bank?
I have to go deposit a money order, which
okay.
is the only – yeah. The only
All right, order. That makes sense. Well, there's people that still go into the grocery store. I can tell you the last time I actually went into a grocery store, with the invention of –
Well, I go to the grocery store because I want to pick my produce. I'm not counting on
– That's an age-old excuse because you know what? There's a lot of places that sell produce in a lot better ways than the grocery store. But, yeah, okay, we'll give you that. That would be one reason to walk into the grocery store.
Yeah.
Although, I have to admit, we sometimes get – but, you know, where I work at, they provide us with plenty of free produce. Not that I'm ever hijacking any and taking any home, but where I would eat it during the day is at work. And they do a great job. We have all kinds of cool stuff at my job, and you know where I work. We have
sure
to be
do.
Over there for me.
Well, I mean,
right,
you might be fighting with my current employer, so.
Well, I know your boss, so maybe we can work out a deal. Maybe we can trade you. Maybe I can get rid of some people on my team and get you over here on our team. I'm kidding. All right, brother. I have a default habit of saying this, where can people find your work masterpieces? But they got to get you here. We appreciate you jumping on, Mr. Adam. Any words of wisdom, parting words of wisdom for us, sir?
I would just say, like, pay attention over these coming weeks. We've got Easter coming up, the shift in weather is slowly happening. But just make sure you're paying attention and not getting too wrapped up in all of the commotion of everything else. Enjoy the time that you have because it can get away from you if you don't. Everybody have a great weekend, and we'll talk soon.
Hi, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. Adam Jividen. Adam Jividen helps us break down our NBA segments. Kind of got off in the weeds there. Sometimes you got to get off in the weeds, right? You know, coming up on April 20th, you get in. Anyway, I'm on a roll, aren't I? We were wanting to have Tony Donahue from the Tony D podcast on about now to talk about IndyCar rolling into St. Pete. The IndyCar, he's down in St. Pete. The IndyCar practice does not end until 10:45. Hopefully we could catch him on the end of the show. But I know that we should be having Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest, our official NASCAR contributor, on with us here in just a few short minutes to break down what's going on in Phoenix. We got a lot coming your way still. My name is Tom Marcos, El Presidente. Stick around. 917-889-8516 is our digit.
Maybe I'm foolish, maybe I'm blind, thinking And I can see through this and see what's behind. Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying. But I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me. Don't put your blame on me. Take a look in the mirror, and what do you see? Do you see it clearer, or are you deceived in what you believe? 'Cause I'm only human after all, and you're...
The Air National Guard is a reserve component of the United States Air Force and serves alongside active duty Air Force members in times of a national crisis. In addition, the Air Guard serves the state and local community in a wide range of capacities. The reason people join the Air Guard is as diverse as our members and includes such reasons as a deep desire to serve their country, money for college, travel, new job skills, and the pride that goes along with belonging to the greatest military organization in the world. I joined because I felt a calling to serve my country, but I didn't want to be far away from my family, so the Indiana Air National Guard was a perfect fit for me. With over 95 different career opportunities to choose from and 100% paid college tuition to any state-funded college, why not give us a call? Call 1-800-841-3103 or visit online at goang.com to find out more. Again, that's 1-800-841-3103. The Air National Guard, guarding America, defending freedom.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike... you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your move.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar.
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything!
Morning face. You get is when you don't sleep well. This is what happened to Linda.
Morning, guys.
Good morning. Ah, what is that thing?
It's me, Linda.
Oh, my God, it talks! Run!
No, it's me, Linda, from HR.
It looks hungry! Save the children! Save them! Stay back! I've got mace!
What
about my eyes? Quit
moving! It's called beauty sleep for a reason. And there's never been a better time to get some.
Get 20% off IKEA Sultan mattresses. IKEA. Love your home.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I haven't seen on the board. Do you guys have Black Rifle coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is... great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so I don't, you know.
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pike, which of course in the Indonesian language, oh, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes. But it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wanting.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just going to order it. They make it freshly roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
History, don't know much biology, don't know much about a science book, don't know much about the French I took, but I do know that I love you, and I know that if you love
me. Mandy. Mandy Pepperidge, well, I haven't seen you since we...
Go away.
I'm sorry, I can only stay a minute.
Let me buy you some lunch. Oh, you've got your lunch. Well, how about some milk? You got your milk, too. Well, can I just massage your thighs while you eat?
Do I have to leave?
Is this any way to treat an intimate friend?
And if this was to be with you, what a wonderful world this would be.
Welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Mark with El Presidente. 917-889-8516 is my digit if you want to join the conversation. We've been talking NBA with Adam Jividen, our official all-around Swiss Army knife, friend of the show, certainly a big Buckeyes fan, Browns fan, Guardians fan, super duper Cavs fan. But helping us break down some NBA. Jumped into that conversation maybe a little bit further into the weeds that we wanted to, as far as, you know, Michael Jordan versus LeBron James. And LeBron James made the comment that he doesn't think in today's world that Michael Jordan could average 50 points a game. And that's probably true. It's probably true just because, like I said, the game is faster than ever. I mean, the training, the nutrition, everything that goes into making a great player, much different in today's era than it was in the Michael Jordan era. So, you know, if you want to give us your thoughts on that, 917-889-8516. We're going to have Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest, join us here in just a few minutes to talk about Phoenix. Tony Donahue, we had scheduled to join us now from the Tony D podcast. He's down in St. Pete. The practice isn't over. The IndyCar practice isn't over till about 10:45. Hopefully we can catch him in on the tail end of this show. We'll see if we can get that going on. If you're listening to us on our podcast and our new group of people that we've joined on Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, anywhere else you can get your podcast, you know, Apple, if you're listening to us on a podcast like I know a lot of you do, go ahead and hit the thumbs up so we know how awesome you are. We already know how awesome we are. Then the great thing about our show is that it's live. If you're the live version of it, you can catch us right here on Blog Talk Radio every Saturday morning from, you know, a roughish 9-ish to 11-ish. Depending on the amount of content that we can get put in. But again, if you're listening to us on our podcast, thank you. And make sure you're following us in the world of X at T-Balance and on The Balance. You know, we got March Madness coming up. We've got the brackets. It's going to be here before we know it. You know, it's been going on. How long have we been doing brackets? As long as I know, we've been doing the show, but I just think as a whole, it's probably been like 30 years. I know ESPN has been doing it for like 37. But Selection Sunday, March 17th, is when it happens. And we are going to be on Bracket Watch. You know, we look at some teams there. You know, we look at Purdue, Providence, and Virginia. Arizona and UCLA squared off Thursday night. In Pauley Pavilion, bringing to a close of the best basketball series in the Pac-12 history. In a few months, the Pac-12 itself will be history. Victim, if you will, if we want to call it a victim or wise business decision of an evolution of college sports that values excess over common sense. We all get it. Money talks the loudest, but that doesn't mean that we have to like it. Here's one thing no one is talking about, Arizona and the Pac-12 getting the last laugh. Even the bracketology is against them. And you know, you look at the different teams. Tennessee is the fourth number one over all C, probably in there against the Wildcats. But it's just going to be unique, if you will, to see what happens. And who's going to be the first team out? It's going to be Providence. It's going to be top overall seed. It's going to be Purdue. Who's going to be the last team in? Is that going to be Virginia? Those are all things that we're going to be together. And we're going to have a bracket for you. And we're going to have our world-famous bracket challenge. And we do this every year. All you have to do is let us know. Let us know who, I mean, how many brackets you want. We usually limited it to the two brackets. We might extend that a little bit more this year, depending on how many people that we get. And we'll have all that information when the bracket's coming out on how you can get your bracket. So looking at some teams that are on the bubble, Villanova, New Mexico, St. John, again, Virginia, mentioned them. You think about the first four out, and we talked about Providence a while ago. You look at Colorado, Iowa, and Utah. And then you know, the next four out, Memphis, Wake Forest, Pittsburgh, Drake. Those are all teams to take a look at. And, you know, IU is not going to be playing. I just don't see it happening. No way. There's no way. But, hey, Indianapolis does have the Midwest bracket on when we start things off. And, you know, you look at Purdue, would probably be in that bracket. You look at Texas Tech and Boise State. And then the East over in Brooklyn, obviously you got to look at UConn being the number one over there, and perhaps maybe Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Memphis. And then you look at the West, you got to think again, like I said, Tennessee would be the number one slot there. And again, this is just rough looking at numbers, rough looking at where teams are at now. And the logic says here's who would be the number one seed. And then you look at Houston, no stranger to March Madness and what's going on with them every year. So some teams to kind of, you know, let's look at like we look at every year. You know, some of the play-in teams might be interesting, like Little Rock, Grambling State, Norfolk State, Connecticut, Virginia, we mentioned them, New Mexico mentioned them, Villanova. All of those are teams that we still are on the edge of a seat of what will happen. So in the Indianapolis bracket, I look for it to be at the moment Purdue, then whoever gets into that play-in game would play against Purdue. I mean, every year we expect them to go deep. I certainly still think that. They're certainly going to get past – boy, the world of basketball would come to a shattering end if Purdue at Indianapolis gets beat by a team like Little Rock or Grambling State. So we're just going to assume that's not going to happen. And then we look at the Texas Tech and Boise State. It would probably be what's in our Indianapolis bracket. And then you move down to Pittsburgh, and they'll probably have a number 5 against the number 12 and the number 4 against the number 13. The number 5 would obviously be Clemson at this point, number 12, Princeton. And then the number 4, Kentucky, and number 13, Appalachian State. Where you look at a lot of things also playing in Indianapolis is the 6 and 11 and the 3 and 14. And so this is going to be an interesting matchup. We look for Indiana State Sycamores, Larry Bird's alumni, and my good friend John's alumni, the Trees. They'll probably be the number 11 seed against Wisconsin. It'll be tough for them. But if they do manage to beat Wisconsin, if Indiana State manages to beat them, and then Marquette's down in the rankings anyway, so we'll see if they're going to be. But that number 3, number 14 is a solid look at who upsets in the first round upsets, if you will. And that could be Vermont and Marquette. Of course, Vermont's been there, done that before. So we'll see what happens. So look over at the East in Brooklyn. And again, number 1, UConn. Stetson would be one of those play-in teams probably, Northwestern and Oklahoma. Some good matchups there. Then, you know, Salt Lake region, BYU, Richmond. Auburn's moving up in stock, so we'll see where they're at. But right now, we look at number four seed, and then you've got Memphis, Carolina. And then in the South, we talked about Houston being the number one slot there, probably with Michigan State and Florida Atlantic. And over in the West there with is Charlotte. In the chart, you have Tennessee, Norfolk, Texas, and Nebraska. So a lot to happen. A lot will happen. But be rest assured that we are definitely going to be there waiting and having our March Madness shows and breaking down everything. Again, that's all just rough notes, rough draft. A lot of things can happen over the next week or so. Congratulations to Purdue Boilermakers who won the Big Ten Championship and did it hands down. Again, as Adam said, we look every year for them to go deep into the run. We'll see if that happens. Very disappointed with my Indiana Hoosiers, and we got to have that discussion after the season's over. They're not going to be playing in March, so we got to talk about Mike Woodson and is he the man for the job there in Bloomington? The question is, who is the man for the job? Are you going to get anybody better? You know, there's a few names out there. There's a few floaters out there, but there certainly won't be any major decisions made. And I still think that Woodson has another year. He's got to do something with this transfer portal. He's got to do better with his recruiting. I know a lot of it's been out of his control. I get that, but at the same time, Indiana, we've got to find the way to get back Indiana basketball, right? I'm old school, and you know, hey, the Bobby Knight days, yes, those are all in our umbrella, if you will, or our rearview mirror, if you will. Well, Bumper Music's going to be taking Salmon's umbrella. My name is Sean Marcos, El Presidente. 917-889-8516 is the digit. Stick around. We're going to be talking with Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest and our official NASCAR contributor. Going to be talking about NASCAR out in Phoenix. Out in the desert, right here on the Balance Radio.
You better, you know me. In anticipation for precipitation, stack chips with a rainy day. Jay, Rain Man is back with Little Miss Sunshine. Rihanna, where you at?
You have my heart, and we'll never be worlds apart. Maybe in magazines, but you still be my star. Baby, cause in the dark, you can't see shiny cars.
The Air National Guard is a reserve component of the United States Air Force and serves alongside active duty Air Force members in times of a national crisis. In addition, the Air Guard serves the state and local community in a wide range of capacities. The reason people join the Air Guard is as diverse as our members and includes such reasons as a deep desire to serve their country, money for college, travel, new job skills, and the pride that goes along with belonging to the greatest military organization in the world. I joined because I felt a calling to serve my country, but I didn't want to be far away from my family, so the Indiana Air National Guard was a perfect fit for me. With over 95 different career opportunities to choose from and 100% paid college tuition to any state-funded college, why not give us a call? Call 1-800-841-3103 or visit online at goang.com to find out more. Again, that's 1-800-841-3103. The Air National Guard, guarding America, defending freedom.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I haven't seen on the board. Do you guys have Black Rifle coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so I don't, you know.
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pike, which of course in the Indonesian language, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes, but it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wanting.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just gonna order it. They make it freshly roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
All right, and welcome back to The Balance. It is March 7th, I think, or March 9th. I don't know. The week has gone along real too fast for us. Thank you, Adam Jividen, our super Browns fan, super Buckeyes fan, Guardians fan, Cavs fan, breaking down this week in the NBA, what's going on in the NBA, and we talked a little bit of March Madness as well. As I had mentioned earlier, we had hoped to have Tony Donahue of the Tony D podcast to help us break down the opening of IndyCar season. He's out in St. Pete, but the practice is not in until 10:45. He hopes to join us toward the end of the show. If not, we'll catch up with him next week. But joining us now is Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest and our official NASCAR contributor. How is you, sir? Hello, Steve. Can you hear us? Hello, Steve. You might be on mute. See you there. Go for Steve. We're going to effort to try to get him going here. And maybe he needs to call back. All right, he needs to call us back, so we'll see what's going on. Maybe he had an issue. So we'll jump in with him. It's always something. Anyway, we're going to wrap it up, put a bow on it here. Let's see if we can try and catch you now. Hi, Steve, can you hear us?
Yeah, I got you. Can you hear me?
All right, sounds good. Yep, can hear you now. All
right.
We're all good.
All right, good.
Well, radio check with Steve. Radio check with Steve. It's all good. Hey, it's Tom in the tower here.
Yeah, I don't know. It was weird. Yeah, I was talking to you, and I wasn't on mute. Don't know. So,
weird.
Here
it
I am.
It all happens. Well, NASCAR, let's get a little recap of last week's racing action, and then we'll get into this week down in Phoenix. Last week in Vegas. Again, left us not wanting, but not giving us, didn't leave us anything not to talk about. So let's talk a little bit about the truck series. Obviously, great win for Rajah Groot out there in Vegas as well. So talk to me a little bit about the recap of Vegas, and we'll get into Phoenix.
Yeah, Rajah Groot, talking about him week ago last night, got his first pole in the series and then went on to win the race. He is, he's been a driver for Diversity Driver that NASCAR has been worked with him in Rev Racing. And last year he moved over from GMS Racing, which shut down at the end of the season. Got an opportunity now with Spire Motorsports that had bought out some of the GMS trucks, as well as bought out Kyle Busch Motorsports at the end of the 2023 NASCAR Truck Series season. So, he had a little difficulty there in a couple parts of the race there and fell behind a little bit, but was able to gather it up. And I think after we saw what had happened there at Daytona to begin the season, and Bubba Wallace and coming over there to have a discussion with him and about, some of his driving out there that caused one of the melees out there in Daytona. Sounds like he may have taken some of that to heart and settled himself down a little bit and was able to get that first win in the NASCAR Truck Series season last week at Vegas.
Well, we won't see the trucks again until March 16th at the WeatherGuard truck race out in Bristol. So we'll keep our eyes on him and how he's doing. They are a very, very exciting win for him as well. Certainly last week in Vegas, John Hunter Nemechek pulled off a great win in the Xfinity Series. And then, of course, we got the Xfinity Series today as well. What are your thoughts on John Hunter Nemechek? He's starting the year off. It's just very solid, like he's been able to do in years past. Just still hasn't been able to get that big one, if you will.
Yeah, you know, he's got this opportunity to run a select number of races this year with Joe Gibbs Racing as he's moved over to the Cup, back into the Cup Series full time with Legacy Motor Club this year, taking over the car the full time. Yeah, he's always seemed to be pretty dominant when it comes to this. And you look back to last year, you know, he was pretty much a perennial favorite throughout the year that we talked about him all year long is week in and week out. I don't think there was really a week that went by that we didn't really talk about him. But, you know, now that he has this opportunity to run a select number of events, yeah, he's right back to where he was and took that win home last week at Vegas. And just jumping over here to Sunday real quick, you know, Carl Larson is, I mean, he dominated the race, won both stages, won the race. And, you know, for Kyle Larson, you know, I was kind of surprised in a lot of ways that he was not up running that wall like he normally does at places like Las Vegas and Homestead and places like that. But all together, all over, I mean, he was in dominant fashion. And, you know, that Hendrick cars, it seemed to be the ones that, you know, we're going to start talking about a little bit more. You know, I know William Byron has, you know, he's somebody that we talked about last year about seven times winning, going to victory lane. And, you know, really Chase Elliott has got to really come off of another after last year in the season that he had with suspensions and some health issues that he had that just really just kiltered his entire year out there, that he really needs a better year. And he nearly, you know, hopefully, you know, some good things are happening for them.
You know, last week we talked about, you know, Austin Hill, how hot he is. He's number one in the current Xfinity standings. And then you have Chandler Smith, Riley Hurst, A.J. Allmendinger, and Cole Custer all around the top five. Talk about those teams. What do they have to do to be ready for Phoenix? Talk with us a little bit about what Phoenix is and how the teams prepare to do well at Phoenix, as there's a lot of elements there that are beyond their control, if you will, weather being one of them, and heat and dust and all that, the things they've dealt with in Vegas as well. What are some of the things, the challenges that Phoenix brings to the Xfinity team's race today?
Yeah, you know, one of the more unique things about the Phoenix is in the last couple of years that NASCAR has taken and changed the track, pulled the track and built and this dog leg that used to be on the back stretch is now turn one. And, you know, you really see a lot of these drivers go down there and dive as far down by that wall as possible, sometimes seeing a very chaotic restart, 5-6 cars wide between the wall and the inside wall and the outside wall. You know, going back and look at last year's race, Sammy Smith was able to capitalize on this, winning his first race in the Xfinity Series. But, you know, Austin Hill, you know, he came up just a little short last week. We were looking for maybe a three-peat. You know, in the series, he won the first two of the season, three times at Daytona, three times there at Atlanta, and then we're kind of looking for him to go three in a row to start the season off. I mean, those guys are just incredibly, you know, as a team, they're just incredible. Looking at just the organization they've put together with him, and you know, you see this just right from the jump, and Austin Hill is just going to be incredibly tough all year long. We're going to talk about him all year long. And you know, how many more wins? It's just a matter of week in and week out. You know, I'm sure we're going to be talking about him back in victory lane multiple times this year. But, you know, he's already made a good go of it this year. He's already locked, you know, for being this early in the year, he's already locked himself into the playoffs for the Xfinity Series. So, you know, right now for him, it's really more about, you know, getting as many playoff points as he can throughout the remainder part of the season. You know, for Phoenix, you know, I going back to that real quick is, you know, I know a lot of people, and we've seen this over the last couple of years, that you get these really chaotic restarts out there, and like I said, you can get as many as 5 or 6 or 7 cars wide from the inside to the outside walls out there. But then the racing seems to really taper off and fall, you know, well beyond what fans are really wanting to see out there. And NASCAR is attempting to kind of fix not only the Xfinity Series cars out there, but the Cup Series cars out there. And it really seems to be the only track that Xfinity Series cars go to that we're kind of having this issue out there, because it is one of the more competitive series that NASCAR has week in and week out. Even when we sometimes say the Cup cars are competitive, we always find a reason to talk about the Xfinity Series race somehow. But Phoenix has just not been it. And, you know, even in this championship race, you go back there and look over the last two seasons, it's really somebody that has been up there in the top couple of spots, whether they've taken the pole or whether they're in the top three or five. There doesn't really seem to be somebody that's coming midway or deep in the field to be able to win these events. So qualifying is really going to be imperative come later on this morning. And, you know, if you're looking at it, then those are the people, top three, top five, is who you're going to be somewhere out there looking to go and win the race later on this afternoon.
Well, Ryan Blaney had a big win last year there in Phoenix. What does he got to do to win there again? And it seems to be a track that, goes well for Ryan Blaney. I like Ryan Blaney. He's a fun driver to watch. But Joey Logano's been leads the Cup practice sessions there at Phoenix as well. So Joey Logano is certainly a contender out there in Phoenix as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, Ryan Blaney was somebody in the Cup Series that we had not really talked about all year long until he come out there. And, you know, at the end of the season, it really just kind of turned it up the next notch and was able to win the finale there in Phoenix. You know, so far right now, and not just talking about Ryan Blaney or Joey Logano as a whole, NASCAR had some practices out there yesterday. They've made some changes to these cars out there over the wintertime, and this is the first time we're seeing some of these changes. We'll also see them again when we get to COTA, Bristol, Martinsville, Richmond, Wilkesboro, places like that. You know, a lot of these drivers that came in yesterday and they were talking about this, Kyle Busch, Chase Elliott, as well as others. Tyler Reddick is three that at least come to my mind right at this particular moment. And they really all said that, you know, and they had some variation of what they said was that NASCAR came in there and they tried to make some changes to the car, but in all honesty, they couldn't really tell the difference between the changes that were made and the changes that you know, NASCAR was attempting to, you know, go for. And the other thing is that Goodyear has gone out there. They've increased the tread on these tires out there that they're hoping will allow some more fall off on some longer runs. Now, that was accomplished in the fact that the tires do start wearing down about 20 laps in or so. Drivers did note that they were about a second off the pace from a new set of tires within 20 laps. And that's kind of what Goodyear was going for by adding this additional tread to these tires. However, overall, the sentiment was that, you know, all these drivers that came in, they all basically said that from their perspective and from what they, you know, went out there and did in practice, that they don't see any substantial differences between what they were running at this and what they will run on Sunday. So I think NASCAR may, at this point, you know, have to reevaluate this car and reevaluate this package once again. Maybe they're waiting to get through Phoenix and Bristol, Richmond, Wilkesboro, COTA, places like that, and then reevaluate where they were or are after the spring, because it's really hard on this one first time out in just a 25-minute or so practice really see how the car is. So I think a lot of this will be contingent upon what happens on Sunday. And then once we get down the road to Bristol and some of these other places, if NASCAR takes and reevaluates the car, maybe makes additional changes. But, you know, if it continues to be like I said, in the Xfinity Series, you know, the Cup Series kind of has followed along with this, is that somebody in those top three, top five, maybe just a little bit outside, and then whoever is able to hold that, you know, first position through that first turn and let racing kind of settle out behind them, they're pretty much gone.
We're talking with Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest and our official NASCAR contributor. Let's go through some of these other drivers, if you will. We just talked about Joey Logano. Let's talk about Denny Hamlin. Tyler Reddick and John Hunter Nemechek in the Cup Series, if you will. All of those had top speeds of around 131, 130, and Austin Cindric at 130.976 miles per hour around the top, round out the top five in practice. Thoughts on those drivers?
Well, if you go back and look at Eric Jones and you look at John Hunter Nemechek, for example, those are two drivers that tested this package out there in Phoenix over the break and last year. So it should be kind of no surprise that, you know, here's two drivers at least out of, you know, the field that should be doing well. And I guess that, you know, that translated already over into the practice speeds that you saw yesterday afternoon. So for those guys that had the opportunity to kind of test this car and shake this car down, and 35 other drivers didn't have this opportunity, you at least have that already in their favor when it comes to Eric Jones and John Hunter Nemechek.
Let's talk about some of the just different types of rule changes and different types of things that we have noticed, again, with penalties in tech inspections. What are some of the new things in 2024 that have been implemented by NASCAR that teams really need to pay closer attention to than what they have in the past?
Well, I think not exactly something that's new, but something that kind of cropped up last week when Chris Buescher's car, lost the tire and then it hit the wall with a really hard impact out there at Las Vegas. And he wasn't by far the only one with a tire issue and a lug nut issue. And teams are still kind of struggling with this, even though we've gone to this one lug nut for the last couple of years. His tire separated out there, caused an impact into the wall, into turn one. And NASCAR has suspended a couple of guys on the number 17 team. But, you know, on the flip side of that is that Bubba Wallace also had an issue in the pits last week in Vegas, too, that required the team to sit in there for somewhere between 12 and 14 or so laps, ended up having to cut the lug nut off of this because they couldn't get it removed. So I know there's been some, you know, a lot of these guys don't only get to go over the wall for the Cup Series week in and week out. Some of these have other duties with, you know, whether they be Joe Gibbs Racing or somebody else that has an Xfinity team or Hendrick Motorsports that lease out their crews to an Xfinity or a Truck Series team on a particular weekend. So these guys are going from five lugs to the single lug on the Cup cars, and, you know, that's causing a little bit of issues that, you know, we've seen out there. And Denny Hamlin was another one last week that had a lug that came loose on the car. He was able to limp it back to pit road and get that lug tightened before. So, you know, that is still something that is really mindful out there because of the fact of what happened to Chris Buescher last week, causing that really hard impact into turn one. And teams got to really continue to be on top of that. Even though that's not really a new rule, it's just something that teams have to be mindful of.
Yeah, that was pretty scary. You know, fortunately, nobody was hurt on that. But, yeah, that just goes to show the importance that these tire changers have to pay attention to it. And I know they explained it in great detail on the broadcast about, you know, how it's got to fit right into the mechanism and so forth. But at the end of the day, it's your job as a tire changer to do that. And then, of course, it obviously ended in two of their tire changers being suspended. It didn't happen on purpose. Obviously, it was a complete accident. But what do teams got to do? Maybe you don't know the answer to this, but what do teams got to do? Because we saw this happen a lot last year, and not so much this year. In fact, this is the first time it's happened to that degree this year with Chris Buescher's car. But what do you think causes that? What can teams do to keep that from? Because that could have ended in a lot worse situation.
Well, you know, there's the substantial differences between the two, between the five logs. Like, you know, I was, you know, some of these teams, like I said, are being leased out, whether they be Joe Gibbs Racing or Hendrick Motorsports, at least their Cup crews out to Truck or Xfinity Series teams in a particular weekend. And the way that these the way that the lugs come off may be materially no real difference left, you know, left to take it off, right, to tighten it, you know, kind of stuff like that. The differences are really in the minute details of this. When you go back to the five lugs on these cars, teams would spin the guns up and get them up to RPM so that when they hit the lug, it was already spinning and it would pretty much pull itself off, where they were not having to wait for that momentarily burst of energy to take and come off. With the one single lug that they have onto that, they cannot do that. They have to place the gun directly into the lug and have it seated into it before they actually spin the gun and take it off or put it back on. And, you know, there's some little kind of minute details, you know, that they kind of hit on, that they think that some of these tire changers are still kind of in that mindset that, you know, you go out there and you may be, you know, at least somebody that has been on a truck team or Xfinity team, and, you know, yes, you practice this stuff all week long, but, you know, you just came out of a race where you were just used to hitting five lugs, or some of these guys that have been around for a really long time, and as they say, bad habits die hard in a lot of ways. And the other thing is that they have to make sure, as you already alluded to, is that this mechanism onto it that holds that lug into place, whether coming on or coming off, you know, they have to really make sure that it is hitting that mechanism and it is fully engaging onto that. And I think, you know, we go back and we look at some of these issues, and, you know, while it doesn't take as much to tighten or unloosen these lugs as they have in the past necessarily, it's just these minute details of making sure that you're not spinning that gun up prior, that you're also making sure that that mechanism is engaging while it is fully locked on the wheel or on the wheel.
Xfinity qualifying's today at 1:00, then we've got the NASCAR Cup Series qualifying today at 2:00, I believe it is. But who are we looking at to be on the pole of the Xfinity race?
Well, I think 25 minutes or so of yesterday, just practicing out there, was more so just a lot of these drivers that hadn't had the opportunity to test in the fall, whether, you know, kind of on these changes. And, you know, I don't think it's really a clear, definitive way of being able to look at what's going to go on later today in Cup Series qualifying. The usuals, I feel, are going to continue to be fast, the Penske's of the world, and maybe even the Hendricks and stuff like that. Maybe we'll have some surprises, like we've already seen in either Eric Jones or John Hunter Nemechek, the two drivers that had the opportunity to go out there and test during those test sessions. But, you know, I think it's just kind of a little too early. I think that a lot of those drivers just really were just going out there trying to shake these cars down, and we'll just have to see what, you know, they're able to do once we get to single car qualifying later today.
All right, well, tomorrow is the big day in Phoenix. We've got Kyle Larson, Ryan Blaney, Martin Truex Jr., William Byron, Ross Chastain, Kyle Busch, Chase Elliott, and Daniel Suarez, Ty Gibbs, and Denny Hamlin all round out the top 10. And a few of those are really kind of falling down in the ranks. William Byron, Kyle Busch, Chase Elliott, Daniel Suarez, those are all Chevy cars. Does one have anything to do with the other?
No, I really don't think so. I think if you go even look back to last year and just how competitive, you know, not only the manufacturers were, but, you know, the particular teams were, we had more drivers win last year across the Cup Series than we had ever had in, you know, 30 years or more when, you know. So I don't think there's really a whole lot of, you know, substantial difference when it comes to that. I think it's just really going to continue to come back down to these teams and what they're able to be able to finagle with these cars, because we've seen in the last couple of weeks, you know, just Logano himself and, you know, what they got caught with. And, you know, they're not by far the only ones out there that aren't trying to find a competitive advantage out there, what little bit that they can find.
Well, we know they haven't qualified yet, so we can't do the $5 DraftKings, but we'll get it from you later on and get it up on social media. So we'll see what happens. But before qualifying, what would you say your initial, hey, I like Joey Logano, or I like, you know, this driver. Who do you like in pre-qualifying?
You know, I'm gonna go and say that something. You know, I'm gonna say William Byron. That you know, I like him right now. We'll see where he qualifies and it goes from there, and go from there.
Steve Wilson, editor in chief of Speedway Digest, our official NASCAR contributor. Steve, we appreciate you joining us. What are you guys working on this week?
Well, right now, just working through Phoenix and starting to prepare for some of these additional events that we've got going through all the way into May. So, you know, a lot of stuff already trying to be planned out.
All righty. Where can people find you working, Matt Speedson, sir?
You can follow us at Speedway Digest on Twitter, Facebook.com/Speedway Digest, and SpeedwayDigest.com.
All right. We appreciate you, Steve. You have a good weekend.
All right. Thank you.
Dave Wilson, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest. Doesn't look like we're going to be able to connect with Tony Donahue. We will connect with him next week and get a recap of what's going on in St. Pete. IndyCar is back. Yep, you heard me say that right. We want to spend a lot more time on IndyCar today. We will make up for that next week right here on the Balance Radio Network. Make sure you check us out on the website at www.thebalancesportscast.com. You can also find us wherever you get your podcast at: Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Apple, Stitcher, Speaker, wherever you get your platforms at. Make sure you go ahead and hit like on us, and then go over to the World of X. Search the Balance, at T Balance, hit follow, and then do the same thing on the Book of Faces and just type the Balance. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. We do this thing called the Balance every Saturday morning, maybe sometimes later than earlier. But the great thing about it is it's our show is a live show, so we don't really do any fancy dancy yet. Editing or anything like that. What you hear is what you get. So we just make sure you follow us on Facebook and on The Balance. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Don't drink and drive. It isn't cool. I'm out of here, deuces.